Excuse me, recordings have started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GDPR Q&A session with the EPDP team and Becky Burr, taking place on Wednesday, the 19th of September 2018 at 1300 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Aiden Federline, NCSG, and Emily Taylor. Aiden has formally assigned Tatiana Tropina as alternate for this call at any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment form. The link is available in the agenda pod to your right. Statements of interest must also be kept up to date. All documents and information can be found on the EPDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view-only Connect room, Adobe Connect room, for non-members to follow the call. So please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated to the mailing list and posted on the GNSL calendar for this meeting. With this, I'd now like to turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and thanks everyone for the on-time start. I just want to welcome and thank Becky for making her time and expertise available today. Many of you know Becky's a member of the ICANN board, but I'm pretty sure most of you know Becky was sitting at the table for the start of ICANN, took part in the initial discussions around many of the very first policies that gave ICANN its value to the domain name space. Was there for all the GTLD rounds, helping with the 2000 round, an active participant in the 2003 rounds, and then helping us through many of the advances ICANN made in the growth of ICANN. And as you know, lately she's the board leader in this subject matter, and not only participates in ICANN on this subject, but globally in many different fora. So, Becky, I haven't seen you for a while, but thank you very much for coming. And please conduct the session the way you see fit, and I'm sure the group will have questions. So it's good to hear your voice.
Thank you so much, Kurt. And good morning from Washington, D.C., good afternoon to et cetera, to everybody who's here. When I was first asked to do this, I had the good sense to know that this falls into the category of absolutely no good deed goes unpunished. But I decided that I would say yes in the notion that if I could help out at all, I was happy to. And I was sure that 27 people would object to my doing it because I'm on the board, or I'm not a European lawyer, or I work for a registry. So I'm sort of, I don't even know what to say, that apparently nobody objected. I have four very high-level brief introductory slides, which are really meant, I think, to sort of capture the why this is hard, and then I know that you have many questions. I've seen some of them, so I propose to move right into questions from that. Let me just say what I have to say are sort of my own views. They are not the board's view. They haven't been endorsed by the board or by org. I'm not aware that I disagree with org on any particular issue, but I just want to be clear. I'm doing this here to sort of generate add a perspective and some data into the discussions and to help in any way I can. One of the reasons that we find ourselves in such a difficult place, and I know that this is particularly difficult for the lawyers who want to sort of revert to black letter law, is that GDPR is is principle-based. It incorporates privacy by design principles, which tell you how to think about privacy and how to consider privacy as you go through your data processing activities. And it also is very much hinged on fair information practices principles. Those are principles that provide guidance, but they are not prescriptive in the sense that they do not say you may not collect information for the following purposes, or, they do in some cases, but basically they are not prescriptive. They're principle. It is principle-based, and it's not possible to know with certainty in advance how the critical balancing tests that apply in the ICANN environment will be applied. And we have to acknowledge that notwithstanding the efforts to harmonize, it's entirely possible that those tests will be applied in a different way from member state to member state. Now, hopefully over time, that those differences will resolve. But at the moment, we really are in a state where we don't have clear guidance, and it doesn't appear that we're going to get clear guidance in the short term. ICANN is working very hard to clarify the legal guidance, but in the meantime, we are working on a more difficult basis. Fundamentally, you have to have a legal basis for processing personal data under GDPR. And there are a couple of lawful bases that are relevant to ICANN, but for reasons that I'll talk about very briefly, are more or less difficult to apply. So the ones that are really, that we need to think about are that you can process data with the consent of the data subject. You can process data in the public interest, and you can process data to further a legitimate purpose consistent with privacy interests of data subjects. Now, we're going to talk about the limitations on those. So those of you who are GDPR experts, I know I can hear you screaming and groaning about whether they're relevant to ICANN, and I think that's a good question. But the point I wanted to make here is even where the processing is lawful, you still have to have adequate safeguards in place, and the data minimization principle has to be respected. So so it's not just enough to say there is a lawful basis for it, therefore all things can happen. It really requires us to think about sort of what's the lawful basis, who is entitled to process data on that basis, and what safeguards must be in place when they do that. And I know all of you know that, in many ways, we come down to the legitimate interest test that ICANN. Consent is a lawful basis for processing, but it must be revocable and real and informed, and an individual must be able to withdraw that consent at any time without significant consequences. That makes reliance on consent extremely difficult in the ICANN environment. There also is a public interest derogation where processing is necessary for performance of a task carried out in the public interest or in the exercise of official authority. Now, ICANN, as we all know, is required by its bylaws to operate in the global public interest, and our policy development process is specifically defined in the bylaws as the mechanism through which we identify the global public interest. The problem is that under GDPR, that global public interest authorization basis really needs to be laid down in either European or member state law. And that's why, for example, you can have laws such as I believe Finland has a law that specifies what data has to be made public. There is a regulation that is applicable to .eu, and that lays down certain requirements with respect to GDPR. But those are not generally applicable outside of the context in which they're written. I think it's probably safe to say that if you're processing data about a Finnish individual, the Finnish Data Protection Authority, and you follow the prescription set out in the Finnish law, the Finnish Data Protection Authority is not likely to come after you, but it's not an entirely clear thing. ICANN does not create European or EU member state law or regulation. So again, notwithstanding the fact that we are being urged over and over again by many parts of the community to make sure that we are reflecting the public interest in accessible who is, as a matter of law, it's very difficult to rely on that lawful basis. Thinking about how to address that is one of the ways, ultimately, that we could resolve this issue. So what it comes down to us is where the processing is necessary for the purposes of the legitimate interests of a data processor, where those interests are proportionate and respectful of the privacy rights of the individual. So here's what I do when I'm thinking about the legitimate interest test, is to start with the personal data elements that are collected to run DNS and to achieve ICANN's purposes, and then understand who, what, why, the context in which those data elements may be used by a third party for legitimate interest. And just to understand why this is so hard is that context is critical. So, high-level blanket statements are very hard to get very comfortable about. Processing in pursuit of X worthy goal is legitimate, legitimate interest and proportionate to the data subject access rights. Well, actually, you have to know a whole lot of additional information to decide whether you're actually meeting that balancing test. Then you have to do the balancing test, and then you have to identify the appropriate safeguards. So in the context of GDPR and the who is contractual requirements, after a great deal of interaction with the community, in consultation with the community, input from the data protection authorities and legal experts, the temporary specification reflects what ICANN.org believes is enforceable in the context of the ICANN environment. And your charge here is to take that temporary specification and develop long-lasting policy around it. Now, obviously, what we have to do is move somewhere within the one-year period allotted to temporary specifications. Does it have to address everything in the universe? Does it have to resolve everything? No, it would be great if it did. But I think what we're seeing in the context of the community discussions regarding unified access or uniform unified access And the manner in which we're using that to seek additional legal clarification, there are still a lot of unknowns out there that need to be addressed. So I just wanted to sort of kind of pose the problem, and then let's go ahead and turn to questions. And I don't know, I got some questions, so Kurt, tell me if you want me just to sort of march through the questions, or if you think people should be, just go ahead and ask them. What do you want to do?
I think you could probably manage the queue better than I. So I would use the questions that people took the time to submit and sort of march through them, but keep an eye on the queue. So
okay.
You can move back and forth in your own judgment.
Okay. Let me just start with the question about the difference between a purpose and a legitimate interest. And I think purpose is just a statement of why you are processing data. I'm processing data to identify and respond to instances of fraud. I'm processing data for marketing. I'm processing data for the purpose of providing a service. I'm processing data to comply with law. Those are purposes in and of itself. There are a million, there are obviously an endless supply of reasons that you might want to process personal data. A legitimate interest is what gives you the legitimate and proportionate interest is what gives you the lawful basis under GDPR. So it's not enough simply to say you have a purpose. You must look at that purpose and then determine whether you have a legitimate interest in the processing. And that, again, comes with the requirements for balancing and consideration about whether reasonable safeguards and appropriate safeguards are in place for this. And then I'll just go on and then I'll go to the queue. The purposes, the difference between ICANN's purposes and the purposes of the contracted parties. So, I think you have to look at this holistically. Obviously, registrars collect data to provide the registration service. They need information about who is registering a name. They need information, the ability to contact that registrant and the ability to bill that registrant. And then they need the information about what their name server is and those kinds of things. And they also collect information about has nothing to do with the WIS, about their interactions with the registrant and all of those things. So so on the one hand, registrars have legitimate a lawful basis because they need to collect this information in order to provide the service. And they may have additional reasons for collecting it. They need to collect some information to enforce their rules. And they may need to collect this information to understand how to make their products better. Those might be lawful purposes based on their relationship with the with the registrant. Registries obviously need some of that information in order to provide their service, in order to provide the registry service, the registry itself, and they need information in order to enforce their rules, to identify and mitigate against malware abuse, misuse of their systems. They may have other legitimate interests for doing that. ICANN has a legitimate interest, or ICANN has purposes and I think legitimate interests in collecting the information and using certain information, and that relates, as the DPAs, as the Article 29 Working Party has said, that goes back to ICANN's mission. Now, in the case of ICANN's mission, the Data Protection Authority's Working Party 29 sort of referred to ICANN's mission at an extremely high level, security and stability. It did not go beyond that into the bylaws, which clearly talk about what we mean by stability and security in the ICANN context, and I think permit quite a larger basis for this. I think that, you know, there are overlapping different legitimate purposes, but I think ICANN clearly does have a legitimate purpose associated with fulfilling its mission as that mission is defined and explicated in the bylaws. And I think the correspondence that we've had from the Article 29 Working Party, which was endorsed by the European Data Protection Board, clearly acknowledges, to my mind, legitimate purpose for ICANN's processing of the data. I'm going to go to the raised hands here just for a moment, and obviously we have 90 minutes, but I hope there are a lot of questions, so I hope we'll be concise in our questions. So first, Cavus, and then Margie.
Hi, Vicky. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to everybody, and good day to you. Thank you very much for accepting this tutorial discussion. The question that I have raised, and I have not been answered, there are two terms has been used, legitimate purpose and legitimate interest. Are these two interchangeably could be used and are the same, or they are two different things? And then, who decides that the purpose for which the data is being transferred or want to be transferred is legitimate or not legitimate? And what are the criteria to decide or determine this legitimacy?
So thanks, Cavus.
One more question, and not to disturb you anymore. You talk about consent. Very good. And you thought that consent may be withdrawn. And that's all good. I raise the same question. If I given a consent and I withdraw the consent, first of all, if the withdrawal is retroactively applicable, that means all information already sent to be withdrawn immediately. And what happened to those which are already in the pipelines? Thank you.
Thanks. So, just starting with your last question first, because I think it's the simplest. Basically, the bottom line here is consent has to be freely given and totally voluntary if you are relying on consent. So that means a person has the right to change their mind and say, I don't want my data published the data controllers who manage that have to be able to affect that right. So we can't require people to consent by contract. That's not going to work. As to what happens for data that has been processed subject to somebody's consent, that is that is withdrawn. That's not entirely clear to me, but I don't think that it's enormously practical to impose this in a cascading way. But what I will say is that it's very clear that if you are a controller and you are processing data on the basis of consent and you engage in onward transfers of that data to third parties, if a data subject comes to you and requests that and withdraws consent and requests that data be erased or those kinds of things, you as a controller do have an obligation to make an effort to communicate and affect that consent with third parties with whom you have shared the data. I'm not sure how it would work in this context, but I can tell you how it works in the marketing context. With respect to purposes and legitimate interests, the GDPR generally uses the word purpose as a standalone. There are a couple of places where I've seen legitimate purpose, but generally a purpose is a purpose. It's here's why I'm somebody's going to make us all seasick with rotating the slides here. A purpose is a purpose. I want to do this for marketing. I want to do this to protect, to investigate a misuse of my trademark. I want to process data to protect consumers. I want to process data to sell my goods and services. Those are all purposes. They are not necessarily legitimate interests, because in order to be a legitimate interest, which then provides a lawful basis for processing under GDPR, it has to be balanced and proportionate with the privacy rights of the individual, and sufficient safeguards have to have been taken to make sure that that the rights of the individual data subject are going to be respected. So I think, you know, that the lawful basis is tied to a legitimate interest, which involves the balancing test and the safeguards. A purpose, I think, is best used as just a description of what's the reason I would like to process the data. Margie?
Thanks, Becky. And we've been talking about a lot of these things on our call. One of the things that you didn't touch upon is other bases under GDPR that could apply. So, for example, Article, say, 6B, related to the performance of contract. That particular lawful basis for processing under GDPR doesn't have the balancing test that applies in the one that relates to legitimate interest. So if you look at 6F, that's where you see the balancing test that's been incorporated into the temporary spec. So my question really is, and then there's also obviously the consent. There's processing necessary to comply with the legal obligation that the controller is subject to. So there are other sections under GDPR that apply to the data we're talking about. And I don't know if you have any insight into why the temporary spec only focused on the legitimate interest one as opposed to the other ones, but that certainly come up in our conversations. And in particular, it matters when you get to, for example, the UDRP and how the UDRP might be applied, because the UDRP and the URF are things that the registrant consents to actually in the registration agreement itself. In order to effectuate those dispute resolutions, you need to be able to provide the information, you know, and have that information provided for the purposes of that arbitration proceeding. So I'm just curious how, you know, your thoughts on the performance of contract aspects and whether the balancing test applies to those.
So I think good question. I think that that when you're looking at necessary to fulfill a contract, you're talking about the relationship really between registrants and registrars, because the registrants generally don't have contractual relations. Well, sometimes they do have some minimal contractual relations passed through registrars, but with registries, but they don't have a contractual relationship with ICANN. So it is hard for ICANN to invoke necessary to perform a contract as a lawful basis for processing here. And I believe that was specifically addressed in one of the letters that we, one of the communications that we received from the data from the Article 29 Working Party. I think that in terms of the contract, you've agreed to comply with a dispute resolution. I would say that probably is a lawful basis. The question would be, what are the circumstances under which that data is made available in the context of UDRP, for example? But I think that necessary to fulfill a contract may have a place in the relationship between a registrar and a registrant, but it's very difficult for ICANN to invoke that as a legitimate basis, as a lawful basis.
And part of what we're doing in this group is identifying each subset of users and parties, I guess, and identify where the purpose lies. But do you have any insight as to why the temporary spec did not include some of the other bases that, you know, could potentially apply?
Is there anything other than necessary to perform a contract that you're thinking about?
Consent is obviously one, right? And I understand that there are difficulties in getting consent, but it's not impossible. And so one of the things I think would be useful from to hear from you is that the elements of, you know, that could apply to getting consent, because I think that's an important basis to keep in mind and to see whether it can fit into the policy.
I think that consent could fit into the policy. It was certainly not something that they're not really systems set up right now by registries and registrars to affect consent. There are limits to it. You have to know who you're getting consent from and what they are entitled to consent to. So, for example, a registrant really couldn't probably consent to having a different admin or tech contact personal data disclosed, or at least it would be extremely difficult to rely on that. But consent could be worked into an ultimate policy, knowing, however, that it is going to require systems to be built in particular ways that they do not operate right now. So I think the judgment was at the time that was not a practical basis for it was not practically useful as a lawful basis. And then with respect to necessary to fulfill a contract, I think that the view is that legitimate interests in terms of UDRP is better describes what ICANN's lawful basis requiring that data to be made available in connection with a UDRP.
Well, we don't have a legal opinion on that, though, right?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, yeah, this is all principle-based, so as you mentioned earlier, it's hard to identify where to, how these are applied. So, thank you. I think those are my questions.
Okay, I'm seeing some questions appear in the notes and action items. Are those questions that I should go to, Kurt? Or should I just continue marching through this list that you sent me?
I think the list that was sent to you were people that took time to send questions ahead of time. So we should, we should look at those.
Okay.
And this is Marika. Sorry, Becky. Just to clarify that the questions on the right, the first ones of those should already be the ones that you have on your list as well. Well, we had some people adding additional questions, I think, after we send you the question. So once you get through your list, I think if you then scroll down to the notepad, you'll probably find some new questions that weren't on the list that we send you. So if there's time left, there are some additional ones that you can hopefully address.
Okay. So I think I've talked about how the legitimate interests that relate to disclosure and access might differ between ICANN and the contracted parties. And the answer is, they're different depending on the role that you're playing, but also there are probably some overlaps here. Transparency requirements of the GDPR, one of the fair information practices principles is that you process personal data in a way that is fair and transparent, that you describe what data you're processing and the purposes for which you are processing it, and that you make that information available to data subjects. We obviously do have some requirements existing in the contract regarding disclosures about the use of who is data, and I think that the transparency issues are you have to have a clear statement about what data is being collected, why it's being collected, with whom it's for what purpose it is being collected and processed, and with whom it's being shared for what purposes. Data minimization and necessity, how do they apply to registration data? Well, I think that the, data minimization is an overarching principle. So when you collect data, you have to have a lawful basis for it. Here we're talking about, let's say, either providing the service in the case of a registrar, that's fairly straightforward. Legitimate interest in the case of ICANN and contracted parties as well. But the question is, you always need to ask whether you need all of the data that you're collecting for the purpose of the legitimate interest or the compliance with contract or whatever the lawful basis is, the data minimization principle applies, and you need to look at whether you're collecting data that you do not need for the lawful basis for your processing. When and where has the necessity of currently collected data been formally established to date? So, I think this is an important question. WHOIS is a legacy system. The elements of WHOIS are generally the product of legacy processing. I do think that we have had an awful lot of conversation over the past many years about what information is necessary to be collected for the various purposes and interests described. So I was just reviewing the final report of the experts working group. There are a bunch of, there's a long discussion and many charts that talk about what information might be appropriate in connection with various purposes. ICANN did go out and create the various user stories that were another articulation of the various what data elements are necessary for whom and under what circumstances. I think it would be, I think ultimately if, you know, in an ideal world, what we would have is a matrix that says, here are all of the legitimate interests associated with processing personal data in the context of domain name registration and ICANN. Here are the third parties, the parties and including third parties who are entitled to invoke those legitimate interests, the circumstances under which they are entitled to invoke those legitimate interests, and the safeguards that need to be in place in order to make that legitimate. That's a major undertaking, and I think, you know, we have bits and pieces of it everywhere. Certainly, some of it is laid out in the temp spec. But I think that, you know, the hard question here is how do we get comfortable that those assertions, because what they are right now is essentially assertions, that those assertions, that the data protection authorities actually agree with those assertions and that the assertions have been articulated with a sufficient degree of granularity so that we actually know when you can invoke that interest, who can invoke those interests, and ideally we would get data protection authority sign off on that wonderful matrix. Now, I think that there are a lot of people who express grave reservations that you could actually do something sufficiently granular to get a data protection authority to sign off on those. And that's partly why we find ourselves in the situation of having a temp spec that says that registries and registrars have to provide reasonable access to those with a legitimate and proportionate interest. That's a restatement of the law. Until we move to a different state where it's clear, for example, that ICANN could make decisions without exposing contracted parties to unquantifiable risk, the decision about, you know, how those legitimate interests play out in each context is left to the contracted parties. I think ICANN has some discussion, a significant amount of discussion, in the most recent document associated with the UAM about whether there are ways in which we can move to providing a more predictable experience by reducing risk and therefore compensating for sort of different risk tolerances between contract among contracted parties. Which, legally speaking, is likely to be the bigger risk to security and stability of the DNS enforcement by the DPAs against ICANN and contracted parties, or who is as it's currently running? I think that's, the truth is, I think both of these things are significant risks. We can't quantify because we just don't know how data protection authorities will enforce this GDPR in the context of domain names and ICANN. So we can't quantify that risk very well. Obviously, the ICANN board does think that who is reasonable access to who is data is an important part of ICANN's mission and is a critical feature in preserving stability and security. The current balance here on this is to require registries and registrars to provide reasonable access to data for legitimate and proportionate interests. And at the moment, in the first instance, it falls to registries and registrars to make a determination about that. If registries and registrars are not providing reasonable access in situations where ICANN believes access is warranted, then I think it falls to ICANN to enforce the temp spec. How would the data protection authority's power to order a controller processor to cease processing all data likely affect ICANN and the contracted parties? Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine that registrars and registries could actually provide the service that they do if they were not permitted to process at least some personal data. So I think that would be a significant problem. As I said, at the fundamental levels, registrars have a certain amount of information that they must process to provide the service, and it seems unlikely to me that's clearly a lawful basis for processing data. So it's hard to imagine a situation in which a DPA would tell them to stop processing data for the lawful purpose of providing the service. Can ICANN legally force a contracted party to disclose registrant data? So here's the crux of this. ICANN is a body that has contractual relationships with registries and registrars. It has the ability to impose obligations on registries and registrars through contract, including through consensus policies, which by the terms of the contract are automatically passed through, imposed, and binding on registries and registrars. There is, of course, a caveat to that, which is that ICANN cannot impose obligations on registrars and registries, whether those are via a specific contract provision or via a consensus policy. It cannot impose obligations that require a party to the agreement to be in violation of the law. So ICANN cannot force registries or registrars to violate GDPR and provisions in contracts that are held to violate the law are generally void as a matter of legal principle. So yes, ICANN can enforce contractual provisions, including consensus policies, so long as those contractual requirements comply with applicable law. Who decides what reasonable access to redacted WHOIS data actually is? Well, in the first instance, under the current arrangement, that's registrars and registries who are providing the WHOIS service. ICANN has enforcement authority where it believes that the contracted parties are not living up to reasonable access. And surely there are likely to be some disputes about that, in which case the ICANN contractual enforcement process has to wade through. Now, I know, you know, a lot of people are talking about ICANN wasting money on legal processes, court cases, and the like. But in some cases, you know, getting sort of driving this down to the ground and getting clear information about this, unless we can get real guidance from data protection authorities, which has not been forthcoming so far, it comes down to, you know, what ICANN views as reasonable access versus what the contracted party views as reasonable access. And it may be that enforcement actions, including resort to appropriate dispute resolution processes, court cases, and the like, is what we need to get there. We're really hoping that we can get a clarification through the UAM process, and that obviously is much more ideal than an endless series of legal cases. Under GDPR, is a consensus policy sufficient to memorialize a data processing agreement or joint controller agreement, or would separate agreements be required? So I think that it's hard to say, to answer this in the abstract, but it seems to me that there are going to be sufficient elements that don't fit into the sort of policy permit, that probably we're going to continue to require separate data processing agreements, although they may refer out to consensus policy in the end. As the roles and responsibilities of parties involved in processing are key to identifying and defining purposes, we feel it's important for the EPDP to identify and evaluate the parties involved in the domain life cycle as a prerequisite to identifying purposes. Do you think it's consistent with the GDPR and good data protection practices? Yes, I certainly do think identifying the parties involved in domain life cycles is consistent with GDPR and good data protection practices. I think there is a lot of pre-existing work on this, so I'm not sure we need to reinvent the wheel. And, of course, I don't think that we need to think of the EPVP as the process that resolves this once and for all. It would be nice if we could do that, but I think that the critical issue is what can be done, what consensus can be reached within the year-long period that we have for turning a temporary spec into consensus policy. That, to me, is really the critical issue, and there needs to be some prioritizing going on. The consensus policy would provide baseline guidance for contracted parties based on the shared requirements existing. However, as we conduct an analysis of the roles and responsibilities, becomes clear that a data protection, a DPA, I think that means a data protection addendum or data processing agreement, a joint controller agreement, or code of conduct would be necessary to implement any consensus policy that you see in the GDPR way. Can a mandate for contracted parties and ICANN to establish these documents be an output from the EPDP? Yes, I think that there has to be the kinds of agreements that get laid out here, and I think that if that's the way the community wants to go, that could be an output of the EPDP. So I've gone through these questions here. I keep losing connectivity, and now I cannot see the screen at all. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we hear
you. Sure, we can, Becky.
Okay, so I can't see the screen at all. I don't know why I've lost connectivity, but if you want to ask me questions while I see if I can get back into the room here, I'm happy to do that.
So Mark from Microsoft has a question, and then Becky, there were some questions submitted, after we sent these to you, so I can ask the people that send questions and might raise their hand. But go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Becky, Mark for the record. Two related questions. Right now, queries for who is data go to the contracted parties. In a couple of proposed alternate models, we could have all queries go to ICANN. In one model, queries go to ICANN, and in real time, they pull the data through an RDAP connection, and they are the ones who reveal it to the end user. And without getting too far ahead of ourselves and getting into access issues, the idea is that at that point, they could evaluate the lawfulness of the request and the appropriateness of the data requester. So the first question is there any benefit to the contracted parties if we were to take that model? The second one is related. If you've read the ECHO guidebook, you know that there is a proposal called a trusted data clearinghouse. There's a similar discussion in the Trachtenberg memo. And in that case, queries go to ICANN, but ICANN is actually a co-repository of the data. And so at that point, there is no outreach via RDAP. The data is already in ICANN's hands. What is the benefit to the contracted parties in either of those models?
So it's a really good question, and I think a lot of us have been talking about looking at whether I think in one case it's referred to as kind of hub and spoke model, where there's, you know, ICANN does accreditation, and then although the databases remain distributed, ICANN reaches out to collect the data. The question would be, would that mechanism allow us to understand and limit the risk associated, the risk to contracted parties? And if so, that would enable us to provide a much more predictable and uniform experience for users, because instead of having everyone in the ecosystem making their own risk tolerance assessments, ICANN would make a risk tolerance assessment and take the carry the risk of that. That obviously would be something that it would have to do based on, you know, fiduciary understanding and the like. But I think if we can get some clarity that actually would help transfer the role of data controller to ICANN, then that would be a very useful way to proceed. We don't know the answer to that, and currently, you know, the view that we have heard from Article 29 is that contracted parties and ICANN are joint controllers, and under GDPR, joint controllers are all liable. But I think that is a promising way forward, and one that we certainly are interested in seeing ICANN pursue to see if we can get some clarification.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification. It was my expectation that structure would make the contracted parties into simple processors as opposed to co-controllers. So thanks for confirming that.
Well, I just want to be very clear. I don't think we know for a fact that it would. It is something that I know ICANN is exploring. And if it would cabin that risk, it would be very beneficial. Should I just go up to the queue? We've got Mark.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Mark Anderson for the transcript. I just wanted to, you know, follow up on something that was said there. You know, you mentioned, you know, controllers and joint controllers there. And, you know, the whole conversation around, you know, controllers and processors, joint controllers, coprocessors, subprocessors, you know, I think a lot has been made on that. And, you know, I think there are a lot of different schools of thought on who has what role there. But, you know, Becky, I'd like to ask, you know, do you have advice for this, you know, this working group on how we should consider each of those roles and how we can navigate that, you know, especially considering all the conflicting opinions out there, and maybe some advice on how, you know, a DPA might view some of those things.
I'm not sure I understand why the roles are conflicting. I feel like registries, registrars, and ICANN have both individual roles, and they have overlapping roles. I'm not sure conflicting makes sense to me.
Sorry, Becky. Can I clarify?
Yeah.
I wasn't saying that they have conflicting roles. I was saying there are conflicting opinions on I guess what label to attach to the different parties involved. And so I've heard people lay out arguments, you know, for different parties to be assigned different labels. As far as, you know, processor, you know, controller, you know, joint controller, coprocessors. You know, and I think you could probably find an argument for any number of different labels to be applied. And I'm just looking for your advice on how, you know, we as the working group can navigate those questions.
Well, I think that the best legal guidance that we have right now, I don't know if best is the right word, the clearest legal guidance we have right now is that the Data Protection Authority's working Article 29 working party has said that with respect to who is, registries, registrars, and ICANN are joint controllers. I suspect if you try to turn a registry into a mere processor through a label, notwithstanding the fact that the Article 29 Working Party has said something different, you're going to get resistance because the assumptions about liability will be different depending on the role. And in the absence of, you know, a blessing from the DPAs, that's taking a significant risk. So I think that my advice to you is to consider that under the current structure, unless we come up with something outside of this, unless we come up with something outside of this, like the hub and spoke model, that and we get some clarification that that addresses risk, I would assume that that everybody in this who's providing this will view themselves as a data controller and make risk assessments based on that exposure. I think Thomas is agreeing with me. If parties jointly determine the purposes and the means of processing, that makes them joint controllers, regardless of what we say. So my view is, under the current circumstances, I wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to persuade registries and registrars that they're mere processors, because I don't think you're going to get anywhere, because I don't think there's a basis for it at this moment in this current structure.
Oh, this is Kurt. I know there were some written questions submitted after the deadline. Ashley Heineman, the U.S. GAC rep, submitted a question, so maybe I could call on her to rephrase the question and then go to Benedict.
Great.
Thanks, Becky. This is Ashley, and actually I posted this on behalf of Lorraine Capon, who couldn't join us today, from the Federal Trade Commission. She basically just points to, the number of WHOIS policies that are being pursued by CCTLDs in Europe in particular, and references the .eu domain and where they provide, among other things, for publication of a legal person's organization name, email, city, and country, and a natural person's email address. And from your perspective, is this an indication that such an approach is GDPR compliant or not? Thanks.
So first of all, in the case of .eu and other CCTLDs that have either local law or regulation that apply to them, they are entitled to invoke the public interest as a lawful basis, because the public interest is laid down in a relevant European or member state law or regulation. So to the extent the .eu regulation says, if somebody ticks a box that says they're a legal person, then it's okay to include personal data in the contact information. That is a luxury that ICANN doesn't currently have to rely on, because ICANN, notwithstanding its global public interest role, is not recognized as a source of public interest under GDPR. What we know in this respect is that the Article 29 Working Party was quite clear in its correspondence with us that one need not, that GDPR does not apply to registration data about a legal person. However, it went on to say specifically, but you can't include personal information in the WHOIS output. So that if there was a way to ensure that if you checked a box that said, I'm a company, I'm a legal person registering this data, and you could ensure that nobody put, nobody from Newstar put becky.burr@team.newstar in as the admin contact or the tech contact, because that would be personal information, and that is what the Article 29 Working Party said must be removed from the registration, the publicly available registration data. So I'm not sure I understand what EU's actual practice is, or at least was, because there was some rumor that they were changing things. But I know that for quite some time, essentially, if you said this is the registrant is a legal person, then all of the contact information went in, even if it was personal data. I'm not entirely certain that's exactly what the that's what the regulation on .eu specifically says. That's how URID has interpreted it. But I think that is absent a regulatory approval for that behavior. That's inconsistent with the guidance that we've received from the data protection authorities.
Okay, Benedict?
Hello, Becky. Very nice to hear your voice, and thanks for all your help so far. I had an idea, and I'd like to run it past you in front of this group, which is that rather than trying to muddy the waters with lots of co-controllers, instead acknowledge that there are essentially two different data flows going on here. One of those is the contractual data flow we're all familiar with of registrant gives data to registrar and so on up the chain, where it's pretty clear to me that the registrar acts as a controller, either solo or jointly with the registry. And there's a kind of what I've described as a quasi-regulatory flow where ICANN is determining some regulatory purposes from top down, and that those apply. And to me, it's pretty clear that ICANN is acting as a controller in that respect, and everybody else in the chain is acting as a processor. Do you think there's any sort of value in separating those two flows and just defining the purposes more clearly? So we're not. And the reason I got here was just thinking that we're kind of trying to put purposes in other people's mouths, which is funky enough with the contracted parties, but gets really painful when we're starting trying to imagine possible purposes for third parties, which we've sort of fudged so far as defining a third party interests. Thank you.
Yeah, so here's the problem. I mean, if that would work, it would be nice. The problem is that controllers, when they release this information to a third party, they continue to be responsible for that third party use of the data. So if you haven't, unless you can get meaningful indemnification from every party to whom you release information, you're kind of on the hook for their processing, or potentially, and therefore, in order to sort of identify an acceptable level of risk, it's hard not to say, here's what I, as a controller, deem to be legitimate interests of third parties, and that's what I'm willing to be on the hook for in a certain way. So I think, it's an interesting process, but I think it's very hard not to take into account the fact that there's liability for onward transfers, and simply saying, you're going to only use it for a legitimate and proportionate interest. When you're providing the information, widely, including to, uncredentialed groups, not subject to a code of conduct, for example, would be a hard risk for folks to take.
If I may follow up, I completely agree about the risks of onward transfer, and so I guess the secondary part of this proposal is that anyone seeking access to registration data in a kind of more than one-off way would be expected to be considered to be deemed as a controller as well. So for that, just separating all of these flows out so that the contractual flow has a designated controller, the regulatory flow has a designated controller, and then the access flow, so the final bit of the puzzle which you mentioned, also has a controller, and that's the people who want the data. They get to determine, they have to determine how the data is used, their own purposes, but they're also bound by GDPR as a controller.
So I think, I suspect, I mean, I can tell you, for example, that Neustar does require people who are accessing this information to agree to model clauses. We view this as an onward transfer. So when we're disclosing information, we impose model clauses, and it is controller clauses that we use. That's an important thing that is required for to make any onward transfers legal. So it's necessary, but I don't think it's sufficient to cabin the risk that somebody says they're using it for a legitimate purpose and then they do something outrageous with it. It's just a risk that, you know, everybody has to calculate.
Thank you very much.
I know Thomas Rickard had submitted actually several questions. So, Thomas,
hard questions.
Yeah.
Be polite, Thomas.
Go ahead, Thomas.
As I'm always. Hi, Becky. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Becky, a few questions for you. So I'm not sure whether to speak on behalf of the board, but in fact, I guess there's a risk for our group to allocate responsibilities for processing activities and determine who is the processor, where joint controller situations are present and the like. And then, you know, to present these in our final report, get that adopted by the GNSL Council to find out that ICANN org does not agree to such allocation of responsibilities. So my question to you is, how do we make sure that we don't run the risk of our recommendations to be rejected? Is there any possibility for the board to engage early or for ICANN legal to closely monitor what we're doing to make sure that we're not running into such a situation? Also, and that's sort of associated, it would be most interesting for our group to understand what ICANN is doing with personal data when it comes to compliance action, for example. So it would be very interesting for us to see a record of processing activities established by ICANN.org if one has been written, so that we can better understand what ICANN is using that data for. And maybe it would be good to have a person inside ICANN to liaise with us on that. And, you know, I have a couple more questions, but just one last aspect. Our charter is quite narrow with respect to what data we can actually analyze. But in fact, there are more data elements that registrars are required to process based on consensus policies and the RAA. And the system, as you know, will only be compliant if all the data elements that are processed are processed in a compliant fashion. So how can we make sure that the other data elements that we can't deal with are analyzed for their legality and that this is actually put into the information that needs to be passed on to registrants and the like? Thanks so much, Becky.
Thank Thank you, Thomas. So let me take the questions in order of difficulty. First of all, I am not speaking for the board, nor am I speaking for org. I'm just trying to be a helpful party in a conversation at this moment. In terms of other data elements that are not part of the temp spec, but that are required to be processed as part of the RAA, that, to my mind, and I'm speaking off the top of my head, seems to me to be contractual, and that the best place to deal with that is in contractual discussions between the contracted parties and ICANN.org. I don't know whether there has been an effort to raise those or not, but, you know, you don't have to go straight into contract negotiations, but it does seem to me that the contracted parties and ICANN have an interest in looking at any other data elements required to be collected and processed for compliance with GDPR. With respect to ICANN's use of personal data in connection with compliance activities and the records of processing activities, I'm going to defer in particular, to Dan Halloran on that. Dan is ICANN's data protection officer. And I know I saw his name on the list of attendees, so I will defer to him on that, but it's an interesting point. With respect to the allocation of risk, and roles, I'm a little puzzled by the notion that this group is going to assign roles to folks, but if you can actually get, you know, if the contracted parties who bear the risk of whatever role is assigned to them and bear the risk of this group getting that wrong, since if you're a controller, you're a controller no matter what you call yourself, then I think, you know, it's an interesting activity, assuming that it can be done in the time allotted. There are two board liaisons, Leon Sanchez and Krista Spain, who are closely following the work of the EPDP. I know that they are paying attention to these kinds of things. The board is taking very interested in this. We are getting briefings and updates from Leon and Chris all the time, and our goal is, of course, not to come in under any circumstances at the last minute and say, wait, what you've done is wrong. We will certainly, if an issue comes up that causes concern, that would certainly be something that we come up with. But I'm just curious, and I know we have only a little bit of time, but I guess my question is, under the current circumstances, where we don't have, you know, some hub and spoke model or some other alternative that might help us, say, with effect and meaning that, you know, contracted parties are processors as opposed to controllers, what the point of assigning the roles is. And maybe we can take that off.
I'm just misunderstanding. Let me try to clarify, if I may, Kurt. We might establish that ICANN, the registries and registrars, are joint controllers for certain processing activities. That requires these parties into a joint controller agreement. The same would apply to escrow and a bureau, where we might determine that ICANN is the controller and the escrow agents and the emergency backend operators are processors. Those require written agreements between those parties. So if we make a recommendation to that effect and find out that I can actually refuse this to enter into such agreements with those parties, then I think we would have exactly the situation that I'm afraid of and that I'd like to avoid.
Okay. Well, I think that I think it's very important then for that ICANN legal, including Dan and the board liaisons, to be closely monitoring the work and raise a hand in the event that they see something uncomfortable coming down the line to resolve those issues early. As I said, the board, not just in this context, but in all contexts, has been really trying hard to get out in front of these issues early on. The last thing we want to do is essentially, have people going down various alleys and tunnels that are not going to result in workable outcomes.
Hi, Becky. This is Kurt. I'm sorry. I didn't know if you can see the screen yet or not. Diane Plout of the IPC has a question.
Go ahead, Diane.
Kurt, just to follow up on what. Thank you. Hi, Becky. Just to follow up on Thomas's point, it's clear in our EPDP to date that it's very much an evaluation of trying to assign roles to make all the different states comfortable and certain about risk allocation. And that's very much a key issue, which is understandable. That's why it's very important to make any type of temporary spec and consensus policy work to understand how ICANN is going to address that risk. And in doing so, to also understand, is there going to be an underlying Article 30 record of processing, technical and procedural safeguards, document retention policy, data subject access rights policy, et cetera, that ICANN is going to make available as a joint controller, particularly in the case of a unifying access model, so that the risk allocation is not only accepted by ICANN, but that the different contracted parties, as well as IP owners and all the other stakeholders involved, could be clear on ICANN's ability to provide a GDPR compliant and data processing compliant background and basis going forward for the processing of personal data. So any inputs by Dan and ICANN, I think, would be very essential to us in moving our agenda forward.
So I'm going to defer to ICANN org on the specifics on your question, but let me just answer that by saying I think Joran has been very clear, both publicly and in conversations with all of us, that the key to, one approach to providing a more predictable experience is to effectively cabin risk and have a central risk tolerance decision made by ICANN in the hopes of clarifying sort of controller liability in any particular case. And I would assume that anybody who views themselves as a controller, which one would have to do in order to have a sort of centralized clarification about liability here, would be well advised to comply with all of the documentation requirements in GDPR, including records of processing activities and the like.
All right, then. So that's a pretty timely close. Unless somebody has a final comment. Gosh, Becky, this was great. It was content-packed and interesting, and I've made a commitment to myself to go back and listen to it again to make sure I caught everything. So on behalf of all of us.
If I said anything wrong, it was a mistake.
Even when I say something right, it's a mistake. So you're in better shape than me. So thanks very much for taking the time with us. And, you know, I'm going to just in that, since you've been so generous from time to time, if we have questions, we might send them your way. But thanks again. And everybody have a great day. And we'll talk on the call tomorrow.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings. To everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.